Who wants to write a note to who printed this book? It's a BBT publication. I don't know if they're concerned with such details. Srila Prabhupada apparently said to depict Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in pictures after he'd accepted sannyas with neck beads, shika maybe, tilak, all these things, which as a Mayavadi sannyasi he wouldn't have had. So maybe it's in that spirit. Anyway, let's go on to discussion of Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
There's a well-known verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Lord Kapila Dev. Satang prasanganam avirya sangvido bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha tajoshvana dashva pavarga vardmani shradharatir bhaktir anukramishyati. Which means that by hearing about me, Lord Kapila, Krishna says, by hearing about me in the association, by hearing about my glories, by hearing in the association of devotees about my glories, that is like a spiritual tonic for the ears and for the heart, by which, hearing which, one becomes satisfied, one advances on the path of liberation or coming out of material consciousness, coming out of this world. And serially or gradually, one's faith in Krishna, one's attraction toward Krishna, and one's love for Krishna develop. So this Vishnu Sahasranama is consideration of the names in Vishnu Sahasranama is an ideal medium for considering the teachings of Gita and Bhagavatam and all these shastras about the nature of Godhead, the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam is about Krishna and his devotees and devotion. These are the topics. And there are other topics about how this material world is miserable, but the central topic is about Krishna, his devotees, and the relationship between them. The central point is Krishna. Without Krishna, there's no bhakti and no bhakti. So obviously the center point is Krishna. So the Vishnu Sahasranama gives a medium by which we can consider the various teachings of the Bhagavatam about Mamavirya, Kapila Dev says, about my glories, particularly about his glories. What makes him so glorious? What is it about him that makes him God? What is his Bhagavata? He is known as Bhagavan. What is his Bhagavata? Bhagavata means that which makes him Bhagavan. That by which he is known as Bhagavan. In Chaitanya Charitamrita we find, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Madhurja Bhagavatasha, the essence of Krishna's godliness here in godliness generally means something like saintliness, but here it means, here I'm using the, in a different sense, to mean that which, that by which he is known as God, the distinguishing characteristics of him being God. The essence of Bhagavata is sweetness. However, in Vishnu Sahasranam, it's mostly concentrating on his greatness. For those who are connoisseurs of sweetness, they will find sweetness everywhere. But even to properly appreciate that sweetness of Krishna coming from our position as veteran relishers of the bitterness of this material world, we need to appreciate the greatness of Krishna before we can properly enter the sweetness. What is that? Abhagya jnani chushe jnana nimba phale. Those who are simply interested in knowledge of this material world, such unfortunate persons have to suck the bitter fruit of such knowledge, which is compared to the bitter fruits of the neem tree. Whereas rasagya kokil kai premamra makule, the devotees who are compared to the kokil, which is roughly translated as cuckoo, they taste this, they eat the buds of the mango, which is of the, they relish the taste of prem. So this hearing Vishnu Sahasranam, this, of course there are many categories of topics in Srimad Bhagavatam, but hearing Vishnu Sahasranam directly focuses us on Krishna. Which helps us to stop focusing on ourselves. Generally we think about ourselves all the time. Even in devotional service we're thinking about my advancement, my service, which is natural and not bad. But the real focus should be Krishna. And even when hearing about Krishna, we are hearing about a person, the Supreme Person. We are also persons. So we may find that we have some of the qualities of Krishna. The jiva also has some of the qualities of Krishna. But we should understand by hearing about these qualities as they appear in Krishna, how Krishna has these qualities to a superlative degree. And we have them only to a minute degree, and that also only by the grace of Krishna. For instance, we hear about Krishna being the controller, Ishvara. We are also Ishvara to some extent. Everyone can be an Ishvara to some extent. Just like someone may take his dog for a walk, and the dog is on a leash. So the dog is controlled by the man. And the dog very happily takes the role of being controlled. That's why people like to keep dogs, because they get the feeling that I am the master of this dog. So we may have the capacity to be the Ishvara of some dog or maybe even of a whole kingdom. Nowadays there are no kingdoms, a whole country. Or even a demigod can be the controller of a planetary system. But our Ishvarata, our capacity to control, is limited and temporary. Whereas Krishna, is his capacity to control is unlimited and eternal and unchallenged or unchallenged. Although, I mean, some people try to challenge, but we know what happens to them. So by hearing these qualities of Krishna, how he is the Bharata, the maintainer, or the husband, we can also become a husband, but not like Krishna. We're also Purusha, enjoyer to some extent, but not like Krishna. And we can appreciate we can come out of the illusion of thinking of ourselves as the enjoyer, the controller, the maintainer, and understand how Krishna actually, although we may have these qualities in an infinitesimal degree, Krishna has these qualities in an infinite degree. However, there are some qualities of Krishna that we cannot even partially manifest. One of them is Swayambhu. That's the first name that to discuss today. Swayambhu means literally self-born. He is born of his own desire, of his own energy. Ajopi sanavyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swam adhishthaya sambhavami atma mayaya. Krishna says, although I am unborn, and he is avyaya atma, his form is, it doesn't deteriorate. Yeah, let's put it like that. Avyayatma. Although he is the controller of all living beings, he manifests himself within the material nature out of his own desire. So Krishna appears to be born, but he's not born like someone else who's born out of a father and mother. Now, he also does have a father and mother. That's true. But still, his birth is by his own desire. He manifests himself. We are born in various bodies, each one different to the other. There'll never be just like this body here. This is Nabhuto Nabhavishati. There's never any body like this, and there never will be exactly a body like this in future. Of course, there may be various Caucasian, thin bodies, something like this in future. But exactly this form is unique. And then, in the next life, if I get the body of it, just like there are so many dogs running around on the street, and they may look similar to us. But if you examine closely, not that I recommend it, but you'll find that they're all different. They're not the same. Probably to the dogs, all the humans look the same. So we get different forms, and they're temporary forms. According to our karma, we get different forms. But Krishna, and we get different forms which are produced through the agency of a mundane father and mother. But Krishna doesn't have a mundane father and mother. His parents are not mundane. And he doesn't appear according to his karma. He doesn't appear under the order of anyone else, just like we find in Bhagavatam. It is stated that karmana daiva netrena jantur deho papatteye. That the living being takes a particular birth according to his karma and according to the direction of the Supreme Lord and the various demigods who oversee these matters. But Krishna, he doesn't have karma. He's not taking birth according to the direction of different demigods. On their request he comes. Not on their order. So, in this way he's self-born, and he shows that when he appears, just like he appears, Krishna appears, that's described. I have to find the verse now. Ah yes, it's described when Krishna appeared in the prison, or house arrest, Devaki and Vasudeva, Vasudeva and Devaki were under house arrest. So Krishna appeared, tamadbhutam balakam bambuje kshanam chaturbhujam shankha gadadyudhayudham shivatsalakshmang galashobikostubham pitamvaram sandrapayodasobhagam. So Krishna appeared not like an ordinary baby covered with blood and the mother having to go through the pain and the unpleasantness, all the blood and all these things of childbirth. But Krishna simply appeared, that's all. And how did he appear? As an astonishing child with lotus eyes, four hands, holding his typical symbols, the conch, the lotus, the club, Shankha Chakra, and Gada Padma, and the wheel, the discus. So on his chest was the mark Srivatsa, the mark of his wife, Lakshmi. He's just born, but he's born with that, because he's eternal. And on his neck was beautified by the Kostuba jewel, hanging around his neck, with yellow clothes, just born child. And a very beautiful complexion, like a rain cloud. So this is the description of Krishna's birth. By his own will, he appeared like this. So in this way, Krishna, he appears by his own will. There's a very distinct difference between Krishna and the jiva. We may consider ourselves to be a controller, or an enjoyer, or a husband, or a maintainer, but there's no way we can say that we manifest ourselves by our own free will. Now, it's also important to understand the nature of Krishna's birth, or coming into, it's not really that he comes into being, just like the Atma, every Atma is eternal. But the body comes into being. The body which we identified as the self comes into being. But Krishna's form is eternal. Another common misconception is that ultimate reality is impersonal and sometimes manifests a form as Vishnu or Shiva or whatever. This is a very great mistake, which if one thinks like this, then there cannot be any real bhakti. if one thinks that the ultimate is ultimately impersonal and takes a form. But no, Krishna's form is eternal. Therefore, his appearance in the world is by his own desire, because impersonal Brahman doesn't have any desire. Impersonal Brahman decided to become the form of Krishna. No, there's no such thing. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead that is being established in every name of Vishnu Sahasranama, in every syllable of all the Vedic literature, even those that are apparently impersonal. For those who understand them properly, they only establish the personality of Godhead. And it's only idiots and fools and envious people who consider otherwise. So, that Krishna is, he manifests in this world by his own desire, also means that he's self-existing. He's self-sufficient. He eternally exists in the spiritual world. He doesn't need the help of anyone else to do anything, even to get born. Someone might think themselves independent, I can do things by myself. But no one can do anything by themselves. Whatever power we have, that is given by Krishna. And even if we think that, well, you see, I'm creative. I created this painting. Or it was my idea to do this. But that intelligence is coming from Krishna. And the materials to make the painting, that also comes from Krishna. So Krishna, only Krishna is truly self-existing, self-maintaining, completely independent, because even all the energy that he manipulates, it's all his own. No one can claim proprietorship over anything. No one can legitimately claim proprietorship over anything. Krishna owns everything. Everything belongs to Krishna. It's only that he gives, all right, you take. You use it. You have a sense of being. There's some sense of independence should be there. If we independent in the same sense of being different from Krishna, different enough so that there's an exchange of love. So there's some exchange between us so that we can offer something to Krishna. But not so independent that we think we don't need Krishna. Or there is no Krishna. I'm doing everything by myself. So all these points should be very carefully understood. He's independent. He doesn't need anyone's help to do anything. Even he gives birth to Brahma, who's also called Swayambhu. Brahma is also sometimes called Swayambhu. Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishma, Balya, Vyasakya, Vayam. In this well-known verse, the first of the 12 Mahajans is named as Swayambhu. Sometimes that name in Buddhism, they give that name also. In Kathmandu, just our ISKCON temple is constructed just next to the deity Swayambhu. It's an ancient, large deity of Vishnu, which was recently rediscovered. Recently means within the last 25 years or so. So Brahma may also be called Swayambhu in the sense that Krishna gives birth to him. He is not born in an ordinary way. He is born from the lotus, coming from Vishnu's navel. There's no sexual interaction. There's no apparent father or mother. But clearly, Brahma comes from Krishna. Okay, the next name, Shambhu. Shambhu is a name generally associated with Lord Shiva. Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu. That verse I just said. Shambhu here means Lord Shiva. In the next verse of Vishnu Sahasranama, there are also several names of Shiva given. Sarva, Sharva, Shiva. So Sharva and Shiva. There are also names of Shiva. Shambhu is a common name. It has almost the same meaning as Shankara, which is another very well-known, probably the best-known name, well, the best-known name of Shiva is Shiva. And then number two is what? Either Mahesh or Shankara. These two are very common names of Shiva. Mahadev, very common name. And Shambhu is also a very well-known name. And there are so many other names. Umapati, Umesh, Durgesh, so many names of Shiva. He's a great personality, no doubt. So it has the same meaning as Shankara, which, as the name Shankara, is also very close in meaning to Shiva. Shiva means auspicious. Sham, as in Shambhu. Shambhu. Sham means auspiciousness, welfare, happiness, and Bhu, just like Swayambhu, means comes into being by himself. Swayam means himself. So Shambhu, he who brings into being welfare, happiness, auspiciousness, and Shankara means, Kara means to make. So he who makes happiness, welfare, auspiciousness. So Shambhu, Shankara, they're very similar in meaning. So we just had the name Swayambhu, who appears by himself. And by taking these two names, or taking Shambhu in relation to Swayambhu, this name of Krishna, we're not talking about Shiva here, we're talking about Krishna, Vishnu Sahasranama. Vishnu and Shiva may share many names. Ultimately, they're all names of Vishnu. Shiva gets his Shivatvam, his auspiciousness, from Vishnu. Vishnu is supreme. So, by his very coming into being is for the sake of bringing happiness, auspiciousness, and welfare to the world. So, or Shambhu means Shambhu, the sense of being. So he exists simply for the sake of causing happiness, welfare, and auspiciousness to others. So it's a very pleasing name, that someone has such a quality that he lives for others, for the welfare of others. There's a verse by Lord Shiva in the Bhagavatam. Let me see if I can remember it. You could look it up. Tapante lokata pena paramaradhanam taddi purushasya akhilatmana. Paramaradhanam taddi purushasya akhilatmana. Tapyante lokata pena. What's the second line? Tapyante, look it up. It's in the 8th canto. Lord Shiva says, Tapyante loka tapena. Sadhava prayasojana. Paramaradaram tadi purushasya kilatmanaha. Lord Shiva says that saintly persons, they accept all kinds of difficulties for the sake of giving welfare to others, for the benefit of others. And this, Lord Shiva says, is the best way to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purushasya Akhilatmana, who resides in everyone's heart. So that's the motto of Shankara. And just the opposite are those who like to cause disturbance to others, and they get some kind of pleasure out of that. So Krishna, by his very appearance in this world, brings joy to others. And that's going on now. Even now, devotees celebrate Janmashtami or Ram Navami. We just celebrated Ram Navami. And just by contemplating, Krishna has appeared. Gaura has appeared. Rama has appeared. There's next is coming Nrisimha Chaturdashi. Nrisimha, we're just waiting. This Hiranyakashipu is oppressing the whole world. I'm just waiting for Nrisimha to come. Rip him to pieces and we'll all be very happy. So just remembering, even after so many eons, he has appeared. And just remembering that brings happiness to the devotees. To what to speak of when he personally appeared. The devotees, they all become very happy. And everything about him causes happiness. Not to the demons. The demons like Hiranyakashipu, they become upset. But we don't care about the demons. I mean, we do, but we care about them, we want them to become happy and Krishna conscious. But we don't care to make them. We don't tell Krishna, don't appear because the demons will be unhappy. Don't chant Hare Krishna because the demons will be disturbed. No, go and chant Hare Krishna. Let them be disturbed. Let the honest people be happy. And the demons will also become happy eventually by hearing the Harinam. So everything about Krishna is simply the cause of happiness to devotees, or everything about him. He looks so beautiful. His activities are so beautiful. His voice is very sweet. What he says is charming. The smell of him, the service to him, madhuram madhuram vapurasya vibho, the body, everything about Krishna. Madhuradipater akilam madhuram. Everything about him is very sweet and pleasing. So everything about him simply causes happiness. So he appears in this world, and although this world is simply miserable, that he appears in it brings some happiness to this world. Otherwise it's dukhalayam. It's simply a place of misery. So, especially by his beauty, his beauty immediately brings happiness to all who see it. How beautiful is Krishna? In the Shastra, in the Bhagavatam, there are many descriptions of the beauty of Krishna. Many poets inspired have written so many poems about the beauty of Krishna, about Rama. How beautiful is Rama. This attraction to the beauty of the Supreme Lord is categorically different to the attraction to the beauty of any mundane form. There have been many Actually, I can't think in history of any beautiful, any men who are famous as being very beautiful. Powerful, yes. Samson from the Bible. Powerful. Goliath from the Bible. Hiranyakashipu from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Materialistic, powerful men. Beautiful women. Well, we have Cleopatra, the Queen of Sheba. Beautiful women, fame. But that kind of beauty, that's gone. Whatever beauty was there. Even in their own lifetime, that is lost. Some years ago, Tribhuvanath Prabhu, who is famous among that small group of devotees who is well loved and will never be forgotten among that small group of devotees who were fortunate enough to associate with him. He once showed me two photos of Brigitte Bardot, who was famous. You know the name, right? She was famous as an extremely beautiful French actress. She's probably still alive. Didn't hear that she died, although, anyway, she might have died by now. You can look it up on the internet if you want, although I wouldn't bother wasting your time. So, yeah, extremely beautiful. By our standards, we don't know what it's like on the heaven, how beautiful the apsaras are, but by our standards, very beautiful. What to speak of the Lakshmis in Vaikuntha, and the queens in Dwarka, and the gopis in Vrindavan. They're different kinds. Anyway, Brigitte Bardot, there was a picture of her when she was young. Very beautiful. And there was a picture of her just taken when she was 60-something years old. And there's a marked difference. I mean, there's like her face looked like someone had got a piece of paper and scrumpled it up and then opened it up again. It was just all little lines everywhere. So that kind of beauty in the material world. The poets, they lament the fleeting beauty of youth. But for Krishna, there's no need to. Because his beauty never goes. And it's attractive. Krishna's beauty, it's not a sexual beauty of this world, but it's attractive to men also. In a purely spiritual way. Just like we find when Rama was in Dandakaranya, so many rishis there, they were attracted to him, to his beauty, to his qualities. And they wanted to associate with him in the same way that Sita did. They're self-realized persons, they have no material desires. And he told them, all right, okay, you can do, but not this time, because in this lifetime there's only Sita. Next time I can take any number of consorts. Next time when I come as Krishna. So they were attracted by his beauty. So Chandrakant, here's just one of many descriptions. Chandrakant ananam ramam ativa priyadarshanam. Priyadarshana is a fairly common name in India. Priyadarshani for women, it's more common. Of pleasing appearance. But ativa priyadarshanam is described here of Ram. Extremely a pleasing appearance. With a face lovelier than the moon. Chandrakantananam Rama Mativa Priyadarshanam. And just to hear the poetic description of everything is pleasing about Krishna. Just by his appearing in this world. Just by being who he is, he's pleasing to everyone. So that is the character, the personality, the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to those who will appreciate. By, again, satam prasangam amavirya samvido, by hearing about Krishna, in the association of devotees. Devotees will naturally glorify Krishna. They're not envious of Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, our natural attraction to him is awakened. There are many instances. Narada came to Rukmini and described Krishna to her. She was already engaged to Shishupal. And Narada, in typical Narada style, came and told her about Krishna. And she thought, I'm not going to marry Shishupal, I'm going to marry Krishna. So just by hearing about him, she became fully attracted to him. So that's the nature of Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, one becomes attracted to him. So, let's see if I have any more notes. So then another name, Aditya. Aditya varnam tamasah purastat. Aditya means, well, it literally means the son of Aditi. So we just had Swayambhu, one who's self-born. Now we have the son of Aditi. And Aditi, we may think, well, that's some temporary role, but there's always some Aditi, because Krishna is Aditya, son of Aditi. There are many, or several sons of Aditi. The demigods are known as Adityas. Among them, there are certain prominent Adityas. Varuna, Mitra, Ariman, Bhaga, Daksha, Angsha, these are some of the prominent Adityas. This name Aditya is often or usually associated with the sun. S-U-N. The sun. Surya. So, of course, this name Aditya can specifically mean Vamana Dev. Can mean Indra. Adityanam aham Vishnur, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, among the Adityas, I am Vishnu, which refers to his appearance as Vamana Dev. But other meanings can be taken from this, that Krishna is the Purusha in the sun. There's Surya Dev, who is the sun god. And there's also Surya Narayana, who's the Narayana manifested in the sun. The energy of the sun comes from Krishna. That which seems to us inconceivable, this tremendously powerful body. According to the scientists, the sun emits more power, more energy in 1 second than the human race could use in billions of years. Because if you consider how much heat and light reaches the earth, or how within the range of the sunlight reaches, how much of it reaches the earth, it's 0.00, 10 to the power of minus some very high number. The earth's just like a tiny pinpoint within the orb of the sun's rays. And we get so much power even on this tiny little planet at every second. So how much power is the sun giving out at every second? I mean, do scientists think about this? Where did that all come from? Just like by chance, there's some tremendous power and everything's sustained very nicely. The sun's not burning out. Eventually it will burn out. They recognize that also. But how is it emitting so much power and at every second, and it's been doing so for, in their estimation, for billions of years, then billions of years ago it should have been much bigger, isn't it? And it should be, I mean, in the course of like at least in the course of 1,000 years, it should be noticeably getting smaller, isn't it? If it's giving out so much energy. And what's being burned up there? And, you know, what is it, oil or wood or what's going on? What is the source of that heat and light? I wonder why, they never seem to answer these, ask these questions even. But the Vedic understanding, which the scientists won't accept, and we don't give a damn what they think, because they can neither prove nor disprove their theories, and nor can we according to their standards. But we have different standards anyway. We accept Shastra. The energy of the sun, and the energy of everything, comes from Krishna. That's all. Simpler explanation. The scientists will hate it. You know, they have huge books nowadays. It's like all in a computer chip, but endless pages of mathematical speculations trying to prove that the universe is without any God. It's all just matter. So that's their explanation. To us it doesn't make any sense. To them it doesn't make any sense what we say. Anyway, we'll all find out in due course of time. We'll all die according to them. They'll die and that will be it. Finished. Let's see. Pascal's wager. You know that? Some French philosopher, Pascal, said that, well, if the atheists are right and there is no God, then anyway we all die and it's all finished and it's all the same. We by believing in God or not believing in God, you neither gained anything nor lost anything. But if the theists are right, the atheists are in for a lot of trouble. And the theists, they're doing a lot better. So it's better to believe in God, because you can't tell by any mundane means whether there is a God or not. So better believe. Because either if the atheists are right, you don't lose anything at the time of death. Or you lose everything. But anyway, you lose everything. And if the theists are right, you really miss out if you're an atheist. So, we're back to Aditya. That's also there in Bhagavad Gita. What is that? That verse? Aditya. Oh, well, there's several places in Gita, but it's specifically about one should meditate on him. What is that verse? Look it up in the 8th chapter. No. That's in the 5th chapter. In the 8th chapter. Kavim Puranam Anushashitaram Anorani Yangsham Anusmaridya Savasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Adityavanang Tamasapurastat. One should meditate on. Well, one of the, meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the color of the sun, or in the category of the sun, and dissipates the darkness. So there are other things said about him. He's the original Kavi, the original that philosopher, original. Kavim Puranam Anushashitaram Anorani Yangsam Anusmridya Savasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Adityavanam Tamasaprastad. So he is the source of energy in the sun, Yat Chakshuresha Savita Sakala Grahanam Rajasamasta Sura Murtir Shesha Teja Yasyagyaya brahmati samrita kala chakra govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami. This mighty sun, which gives light to the whole universe, which sustains the whole universe, that is giving light and heat on the order of Krishna, is traveling in its orbit on the order of Krishna. So he is the Purusha in the sun, is one of the 12 Adityas, and one who sustains and nourishes everything like the sun. The sun is the source, within this universe, the sun is the source of sustenance and nourishment. Nothing can exist without the sun. So, like that, Krishna sustains and nourishes everything. Krishna is the light of the universe. Krishna Surja Sama Maya Hoyandaka Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Radhika. Krishna is, there are many comparisons of Krishna with the sun. Krishna is just like the sun and Maya is just like darkness. It's a very apt comparison because darkness means absence of light. Darkness is defined in terms of light. So Maya means not thinking of Krishna or not recognizing Krishna. So in the same way, just like Krishna is the sun of knowledge, or the light by which everything is lit up, and Maya is the darkness in which everything seems black and we can't see anything, we don't know where we're going, is the absence of Krishna consciousness. Where there is Krishna, there's no question of Maya coming. So, Krishna, yes, that verse is there also. What is that? Jnanena tu tadajnanam yesham nashitam atmanaha. Yesham adityavajnanam prakashyati tatparam. That verse is there in the Gita. That when one has knowledge, when one spiritual knowledge arises within one's consciousness, it's just like the sun arising by which one can see everything clearly. So when clear knowledge arises, one can see everything and understand everything very clearly. All the confusion is finished forever. Unless you let the sun set. Unless one deliberately lets the sun of Krishna consciousness set in one's life. So what one has to move with the sun. Those who move with the sun, they always remain in the sunlight. Nowadays you can get an airplane and fly around with the sun. But just like the Arun is the chariot driver of the sun, we learn from the Bhagavatam and other Shastras. He's driving the chariot and not looking where he's going, because he's turning around and looking at the sun god who drives the chariot. And there are 60,000 Valakilyas who are thumb-sized sages, so they travel with the sun and glorify him. So if we remain always in Krishna consciousness, then the sun will never set. So Krishna is just like the sun. Similar to the sun, we just had the name Swayambhu, which means he manifests himself. So the sun, it's not that someone has to order, now the sun should rise, or the sun rises on anyone's order. He's rising on Krishna's order. But the sun is as if self-manifest. He just arises by himself. So Krishna is compared to the sun in that way also. He's self-manifest. And also, just like the sun, the rising of the sun brings happiness and welfare. We're no longer groping in the darkness. The sun nourishes everything. So in that way, these two names, Swayambhu and Shambhu, they're also quite relatable to the name Aditya. Krishna is just like the sun. Krishna is the supporter and the nourisher of everything. Hare Krishna. I thought I'd get through a few more names today, but I didn't. 39 names covered. Long way to go for 1,000. Hare Krishna, any questions specifically about this? There's so many things can be said about these topics. Just what I've gathered here from different commentators I'm narrating, plus some other thoughts which may arise by the grace of Krishna the Son in everyone's heart. Any questions? Any points? Yeah. Why do the demigods? They get Krishna's names?
Like Shambhu.
Shambhu, Indra, Chandra, they're all names of Krishna. Well, they manifest. Why do they get the names of Krishna? Well, they manifest to some extent the qualities of Krishna within this world. And if you say, why do they get the names of Krishna? Well, you can't really get any name different from that of Krishna. Because there's no name, there's nothing, there's no quality that a name can signify which is not, doesn't originate in Krishna. So, that's why. And Shambhu also, when we say Shiva, he is also auspicious. It's not just some fake name, just like some boy may be named by his parents Gopal, but he's not Krishna. And there's nothing to do with cows. He's just called Gopal, that's all. But Shiva, he actually is auspicious. By remembering Shiva, one is benefited. He is the greatest personality after Vishnu, from one perspective. Vaishnavanam yatha Shambhu. He's counted as the greatest Vaishnava. So he is Shiva, Shankara, Mahadev. He is among the gods. He is great. There's no doubt.
If you don't read this, Vishnu Sahasrara, you never know that Shambhu is Krishna.
If you don't read Vishnu Sahasrara, if you don't hear it, you'll never know that Shambhu is Krishna. Well, yeah, we won't know anything unless we learn and hear. Right? We learn by hearing. We learn about Krishna principally by hearing. Yeah. Oh, well, that's the famous verse. What is that? Rama, Rama. What is that? Rama, Rameti, Rameti. Rame, Rama, Manorame. Sahasranama, Tulya, Bis. Rama, Nama, Varanane. Famous, but I forgot it. That comes at the end of the Vishnu Sahasranam. That by chanting the name of Rama once, one gets the benefit of chanting 1,000 names of Vishnu. What is it? Rama, Rameti, Rameti, Rame, Rama, Manorame, Sahasranama, Tulyabhis, Rama, Nama, Varanane. Well, Lord Shiva says that, so it's not in this Vishnu Sahasranama. So, yeah, you chant Rama. And then if you chant... But this consideration, also, you get this benefit, you get that benefit. A devotee doesn't think like that. To say you get the benefit of... We can't say it's not true, because it's a sastric statement, that by chanting the name of Rama, one gets the benefit of chanting 1,000 names of Vishnu. It's not that it's untrue, but it also depends on the attitude. One who's thinking in terms of what benefit I get, it's almost mundane. So one who's chanting in love, they get a completely different type of benefit by chanting the names of the Lord. When we're not thinking of what benefit I get and we're simply chanting because we want to glorify the Supreme Lord, then the benefit that we get is Krishna's mercy in the form of love for Him, which devotees don't calculate. I'll get this benefit, that benefit. They don't calculate like that. They simply want to serve Krishna and glorify Him. So that statement is there. Yeah, chant the name of Rama, 1,000 times the name of Vishnu. And then chant Krishna, that's like chanting Rama 3 times. But it's not like there's some... I mean, the glories of any name of Vishnu and the glories of the name of Rama are unlimited. And so, it's 3 times unlimited. In other words, there's no material calculation here. That we can say that's indicative. We find that also sometimes the name Vishnu is used for Krishna in Vrindavan. Is Vishnu such a bad name that we should ban it? Don't say the names of Vishnu, only say Krishna. We don't find any such thing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.